Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Episode 1, The Arrival.
Welcome to this, the first episode of Italia 77. We're going to wind back the clock to the 1970s, when two provincial Lancastrians find ourselves landed in Rome from the UK with the intention of taking the Italian sporting scene by storm. One is a failed dental student, that's me, Ian McAllister. The other, my good friend and aging rugby star, Dick Greenwood, also known as JRH. Now, this is far from being a sporting memoir. In fact, it's more of a journey of enlightenment, insight and friendship, following a five-year trail from Rome to Florence, taking in the sounds, sights, tastes, and some of the peculiarities we encountered along the way. So join us on an episodic romp through Italy as we naive Brits stumble through the ranks of Italian society, cultural awareness, business plots, cuisine, and romance. Remember, of course, this was in a world before internet and social media helped to shrink the planet. Cultural differences were, shall we say, much more different than they are now, as you'll soon hear. All of the following is true. So come with us on this journey. Let's go, or as they say in Italy, andiamo. If you've ever been shot at in Sicily, dined a dip by the water's edge on the sun-drenched Isle of Capri, done business on the strangest of Italian towns, been banged up in Rome's infamous jail, wept at a much-loved matriarch's funeral, and been marched out of St. Peter's by the Swiss Guard, if you've ever savored the brilliance and diversity of Italian cuisine, been overwhelmed by their art and architecture, sold 10,000 rugby shirts to Italian fashion houses, and finally, grammatically escaped from using the infinitive and arrived at the conditional, then there is most certainly an intriguing tale to be told. You're listening to Italia 77.
Our families came to see us off, which would seem a bit of a strange thing nowadays, with continental European travel being so common. With the number of relatives in attendance, it seemed more like we were emigrating to the Antipodes. However, back then, it was an unusual occurrence to pull up sticks and to go and live and work in a foreign country. The onlooker would naturally see risk all along the road. So we walked with a sense of trepidation, which later became a swagger, as we realised that we were doing something excitingly different. Ian had never flown before, so the descent into the Rome night skies was unnerving, although at the same time it was exhilarating. Anyway, the plane doors opened, and descending the steps, we experienced something we will never forget. We were hit by two unusual sensations. First, the distinct smell of hot oil from the jet engines, something that Ian had never experienced before. However, what was to follow was something more. It was something that was about to delineate our past and our future. We were met by the most amazing raft of hot air, which just didn't go away. It wasn't from the engines of the plane. It was natural. It was just simply the hot August air of the Roman night. If ever there was a marker to say our new world had begun, then this was it. We had crossed the Rubicon. It was getting on for 2 a.m. and we were met by a man who was to become our staunch friend and supporter. Pepe Pagni was one of the main figures of Rugby Roma Olympics board. He was also a renowned surgeon and owned an orthopaedic hospital on the outskirts of Rome. Pepe spoke pretty good English, had an open, suntanned face, but what was abundantly clear from the first moment that he was clearly better dressed than we were. We noticed that he had a deep blue silk shirt, way before that noted trendsetter Terence Conran contrived to dress his waiters in that unusual and distinctive colour. But also, he wore an off-white, stylish pair of slacks that were only gently flared, and not to the exaggerated proportions of 1970s Britain. And now, wow, what is this that we're seeing? No socks and suede loafers. How unfair of him to pull this suntanned, no-sock angle on us. Heaven forbid we'd only just arrived, and we were clearly only able to take so much of this before our confidence would crumble. Ian declared he once had a suntanned ankle a couple of years before. It lasted only a few days, but this guy looked as if this was a regular occurrence. My God, he probably sashayed round like this for months on end. And what were his sunglasses doing on top of his head? It must have been 8 hours since the sun went down. It was at this point that I began to think that if I looked over my shoulder, Federico Fellini would be there transforming Pepe's shirt and all of us into a black and white Dolce Vita moment. It was the weekend, and Rome in August was bereft of locals, but swamped by tourists. Most Roman families would spend July and August at the coast. The men might work in town in July and parts of August, but at the weekends they would make their way to join their family at the seaside. Rome was even more interesting in daylight. But we didn't pay much attention to the sights as we made our way to the SS1 Aurelia and headed for the coast. Pepe was taking us all to his villa in Monte Argentario to spend a few days and help us settle into Italian life. Please imagine a 1973 BMW 6 Series. It's got two doors and it's very sleek. Nevertheless, we managed to assign the seating as follows. Pepe at the wheel, me up front, Susan, Emma and Ian scrunched up in the back, and young Will on Sue's lap. And don't forget the air conditioning, provided by Pepe's pungent cigarettes. Taking off in our new sardine can from Parioli, we feel the G-force immediately as Pepe rams his GT version into Formula One mode. Susan winces as we manoeuvre our way through the Roman traffic. The windows are opened and Pepe naturally drops his gold, Rolexed forearm languidly out of the window, while simultaneously sucking on his cigarette. We accelerate so fiercely on the Circonvallazione, the ring road, that Susan cries in spontaneous anguish, "Pepe, bloody hell, velocità! Take it easy, would you?" I don't think he comprehended the fear of his passengers. Sotto voce, we suggested that his driving skills and their potential consequences could be good for his hospital's business. Moments later, the entire contingent of Lancastrian passengers went into what could only be described as a vertical version of the fetal position. Later, looking sideways and upwards, I inserted a metaphorical gum shield and arm horizontally protecting the face as if to ward off a high-swinging tackle at Twickenham. An ancient consular road, the Via Aurelia connects Rome with France, following the coast of the Tyrrhenian and Ligurian seas, and also passes through 9 provincial capitals, as well as a host of important tourist locations. However, we only need the initial part of this route, which is just about an hour and a half's drive to Pepe's villa. There is less traffic than in Rome, and the road differs from the British motorways for 2 reasons. First, there are only 2 lanes, and second, there is the most amazing floral display in the central reservation, dividing the north and south carriageways. Hesitantly, Susan tries a few words of Italian. "Per favore, Pepe, come si chiama?" It doesn't quite come out right, and she gives up. Oh, blast. Peppy, what are these flowers called? Oleander, he replies. Susan and Ian then look at each other in bemusement. Peppy explains that oleander is a shrub with beautiful, showy, profuse and fragrant flowers. Another startling contrast with our good old M6 for us to take on board. Oleander on the Autostrada. Who knows, but possibly a potential title for this podcast. Monte Argentario is a peninsula on the southernmost tip of Tuscany, roughly an hour and a half from both Rome and Florence. The peninsula, with its central mountain, is connected to the mainland by three causeways, which form two beautiful lagoons. There are two main ports, Porto Ercole, very refined with its high-profile marina full of jet-set boats, and the world-famous Pelicano Hotel. Then there is Porto Santo Stefano, which is more of a working port with two harbours and a long trading history. In its own natural way, Porto Santo Stefano eclipses its more sophisticated neighbour. As a matter of interest, Caravaggio, one of the great Italian painters, was murdered in Porto Santo Stefano as a result of a vendetta. However, whatever way you want to look at this area, its roots are principally pre-Etruscan, but not immune to a speeding Series 6 BMW from Rome. In a while, we finally see the sea as we pass by Civitavecchia. This is an ancient harbour town constructed at the beginning of the 2nd century by Emperor Trajan. Today, Civitavecchia is a major cruise and ferry port, the main starting point for sea connections from central Italy to Sardinia, Sicily and Barcelona. Fishing, sadly, now is only of secondary importance, and despite the exciting vivid blue of the Mediterranean, two huge thermal power stations rather spoil the view. Nevertheless, having first seen the sea, we ignore the modern day intrusions and power on to Argentario. Susan is now more relaxed as we have moved off the main highway onto minor coastal roads and we are slowly winding our way to Porto Santo Stefano. Arriving at Pepe's villa, we try to control our enthusiasm when we meet his wife, Mariella. Although not speaking English, she is utterly charming and we feel better because of her reaction. We feel more inclined to give back and try harder. Over the years, we've seen such displays of positivity and kindness, and we know indisputably that if there was an Olympic Games for charm, there would be one nation that would assuredly make the final. Their son Francesco is a year or two younger than Ian and is a promising young player. He has played for the Italian youth team and has aspirations to play for Roma's first team this year. Francesco is a very cool young man who speaks a little bit of English, but there's an issue. Yet again, he is clearly better dressed than us. We've only been here for less than one day, and this problem has already arisen twice. Mental note to ourselves. We have to sort this situation out pretty damn quick. Connecting with Francesco is reassuring for Ian, as it signifies there's an outward-looking, youthful roadmap for him to set against a possible au pair option. Before lunch, we descend the steps to a private beach and sunbathing area. We are now swimming in the Med. Si, signore, this was just how we dreamed it could be. Surely, we think, this can't get any better. Ah, but then lunch is about to be served. We showered and changed into whatever clothes we thought we could get away with to avoid our sartorial inelegance being judged by our Italian experts. Ian then looks at my platform navy and green shoes and his heart sinks. The shoes were a nod in the direction of Gilbert O'Sullivan, a then successful UK singer, famous for the hit song Alone Again, Naturally. However, it fleetingly occurs to Ian that if we keep this look going in Italy, we might very well fulfil the prophecy of the song. The setting is exquisite, with a big table set, actually with more place settings than there were people in the villa, on the beautiful terrace overlooking the sea. I notice that there are two staff setting up and about to serve lunch. Based upon our very short stay so far, and encouraged by our first impressions, I think we would now have been disappointed had Pepe not had servants. I have a cold beer, but Pepe cajoles Ian into a Campari soda. Ian, this is the perfect aperitivo. It gets your digestive juices flowing. It was a pre-mixed triangular bottle, and Pepe continues. Ian, it is important that whenever you drink Campari, you must always have a slice of orange, a principle that he has followed to this day. The three of us stroll to the edge of the terrace and have a very convivial conversation, mainly in English, but to our credit, we are now interspersing some Italian words. We have made an effort, something that our charming host seems to appreciate. This is a tactic, a practice that we will continue to implement during our Italian journey. Italians are flattered, enthusiastic, and encouraging if you make an effort. We immediately recognized it at that moment with Pepe, and we never stopped trying. A friend of Pepe, and also a member of the rugby club, joins us with his family. Now in England, it would be a bit of a challenge to accommodate the seamless introduction of quite different groups of people into a luncheon party and then make all parties feel relaxed. In Italy, it was effortless, and we made another mental note to ourselves. The maid leaves a plate at each setting before we sit down. Ian, glancing at the contents of the plate, as it looks a bit strange. Pepe, what's this? Is it ham? It looks like ham or bacon, but it's not cooked. Pepe, it's raw. What's going on? Without being patronising, he tells me this is cured ham from an area called Parma. Then Pepe cuts a small slice of melon from the plate to create the perfect accompaniment. From our middle-class backgrounds, much as we might have thought we were well prepared for whatever social challenge came our way, the experiences of the last couple of days have taken us completely by surprise. A serious hint to us that we might want to begin to compile our own cultural thesaurus. So, lunch begins with this wonderful antipasto of prosciutto e melone, with the maid serving a delightful wine, Tokaj. Pepe says it is a white wine adapted from the Hungarian variety and grows in Veneto, the northeastern area of Italy. Ian then says, we would be interested in exporting Italian wine to England. We had briefly discussed other potential opportunities to accompany our rugby, but now the whole ball game has been moved on. And what does Pepe say? I know the owner of the vineyard, and I can put you in touch. Ian feels himself moving in a new world, well removed from his student background, and entering a possible new commercial world where influence seems to abound. We are slowly getting the impression that our newfound friend is very well connected. The diners interconnect beautifully. Little Emma and Sue are doing very well, with an equally charming response from the Italians. And everyone is relaxed. Then the moment that we were anticipating is about to happen. The spaghetti. The maid brings out a big dish and then serves everyone. But we are a bit confused that, although it looks similar to spaghetti, the pasta has a fine hole running through the middle, and the sauce is not the bolognese meat sauce. The sauce is tomato-based casserole type of sauce, with tiny pieces of flaky veal. Then comes one of the most embarrassing questions that I suspect that Ian has ever uttered. Pepe, Why is this not spaghetti bolognese? Now, before all you millennials start kicking off, back in 1973 England, except in maybe places like La Terrazza in Soho, the only Italian fare that was known in the UK was spag bol, lasagna, cannelloni and pizza. There were no variations. And in the early 1970s, this was our compass, our expectation. Pepe then politely explained that there are many types of pasta. And it slowly dawned on us that pasta was the collective title for their wondrous array of flour and water products. He explained that there are many different shapes that are meant to go with different types of sauces. Pretty obvious nowadays, but visionary for us back then. This pasta was bucatini, with a tomato sauce laced with tiny bits of veal. "Dick, do you like this?" Pepe asked. "I most certainly do," I say. "It's fantastic." Now, I have a good appetite, and I enthusiastically plough my way through what could only be described as an abundant second helping. "My goodness, Pepe, this is one of the finest meals I've ever had," said a replete Greenwood. What was about to happen next was to be a seminal moment, not dissimilar to that wall of heat at Ciampino Airport the night before. No, even more than that. This was a St. Paul on the road to Damascus moment. So, what happened? The maid then brought out an entire round of roast veal. I had no option but to place my head in my hands and whisper in our pidgin Italian, "Siamo barbariani. We are barbarians." Embarrassingly, we had just realised that pasta is only the starter course. The roast veal had been casseroled in tomato, garlic, some white wine and oregano, with the casserole juices providing the sauce for the bucatini. The maid sliced the meat and it was served with sides of spinach tossed in olive oil and lemon juice. Despite being barbarians, we overcame our embarrassment and fully dived into the main course along with lashings of the tocai. What we had experienced in less than 24 hours was nothing more than a full-on blitz of new sensations. When was it going to end? Well, not anytime soon, as a plate of wobbling panna cotta and a strawberry coulis were placed before us. Now, panna cotta is a typical Italian dessert of sweetened cream, thickened with gelatin, and moulded. It is meant to wobble, and wobble it did. The table conversation is developing apace, and fuelled by wine, our confidence is growing, and we are now throwing in even more Italian words into our English sentences. Admittedly, we are pointing a lot and speaking in our O-level Latin infinitives. Our cunning plan seems to be working, if only up to a point. Heaven forbid, what's happening now? They've only just brought out a bowl of fruit, a beautiful selection of peaches and apricots. Francesco is teaching Susan to put a slice of peach into her wine glass. Finally, the smell of espresso heralds the end of the meal. But just when we thought it was all over, cognac and an array of digestivos are placed on the table. A thoroughly indulgent but heavenly experience. We Italians live to eat. We don't eat to live, Pepe explains. He didn't have to. We understood already and were thankful to have found ourselves involved with such a brilliant philosophy.
Italia 77 was devised, written and introduced by me, Ian McAllister, and read by Richard Greenwood, who also contributed to the writing. It was recorded and produced by Tom Allam and Nigel Heath at La Cucina Studios, London, and edited by Stu Smith, Nigel Heath and Jamie Allen. If you've enjoyed the show, please hit the like button, subscribe and consider leaving a review. Italia 77 is a Zacuti production. Be sure to keep listening. There's plenty more adventures to come.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.